All rise. Court is in session. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB.
And suck in Philadelphia.
A Radio 1 station.
Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman. Better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
And a very good Sunday morning to you. Welcome to Court Radio. I am your co-host, Tiffany Bacon. It's so wonderful that you've decided to join us today. We really appreciate you being here. This is the opportunity for you to call in and ask any legal question you may have. And I do say question as in singular. Please call us at 215-263-1079 and we will be happy to serve you. I'd like to introduce the one, the only Dean Weitzman and the one and only David Rappaport. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hello to Tiffany. Hey, David. And in hey, Tiffany, Dean. David is coming out today.
Oh,
well,
geez.
He's getting his new nickname.
It's Rappy.
We're going to just call him Rappy for
Rappy?
Now.
Rappy?
Yeah, that's it. It's Rappy. Simple Rappy.
No.
He doesn't like saying David Rappaport.
Yeah.
Say Rappy.
Yeah, well, because that's his real nickname.
How about Rap?
All right, I'll give you Rap.
Lord.
All right, so we have Tiffy B and Rap.
I'll live with that.
We're you know, the show is growing and listeners are growing. We've got listeners as far away as China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody checked the blog from China and
nice.
Yeah. Jenny Yao from China has checked the blog and commented on our 9/11 blog entry that we did this week, and she really liked it. So we want to give a shout out to Jenny and thank her for checking it out. For those of you who don't know about our blog, it's blogmyphillylawyer.com. And when you go there, there's all kinds of great information about some of the topics we're talking about here during the week and some other topics that I think about that come up from time to time. And and if you have an interest, if you're thinking like, I really want to know about patent law, you know, I've got this contraption that's an automatic toilet paper feeder thing, and I want to know how to patent that. Well, you can ask a question on the blog, and we'll get to it and give you a thorough answer on whatever strikes your legal fancy, and then some.
Mm-hmm.
So, where are we? Today, it's a kind of a cloudy day in Philadelphia. I have some people coming over for the first Eagles game.
Okay, yeah.
You know, our birds are back in town.
You smoking a pork butt?
Yeah, don't tell the rabbi, but yes, I am. I'm smoking a pork butt.
You're coming out too, aren't you? I'll bet you there's shrimp and lobster too.
I'm smoking a couple pork butts, but, you know,
and
whatever.
And whatever else.
Wow. So it's kind of cloudy, but, you know, they say that it's going to get nice today. And I'm certainly looking forward to the Eagles' first game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
All good things to Donovan and Mr. Vic and the rest of the team.
Perhaps a better showing than the Phillies.
Perhaps a better showing than the Phillies. Yeah, I was at yesterday's game, and I have to say that I want to be the first one to make a contribution for the psychiatrist that the bullpen needs, because those fellas have a lot of talent, and yet they seem to find ways to lose games. I think this is like the 16th save of the year that was blown.
Mm.
16th
wow.
save of the year
That's
that was blown.
Right at the end, too. Last
yeah.
two innings.
It's painful. Really, it's painful.
Yeah.
If the Phillies don't get very far this year in the playoff hunt, I honestly believe it won't be because of the bats. It's going to be because of the arms.
Definitely. It usually is.
I also have faith. And as somebody who has a lot of optimism and a lot of faith, I believe that we still can pull this out and turn it around, and they can get hot again with their closers. But right now, that's where we're lacking.
And don't forget to give us a call if you're just tuning in. This is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. You can reach us here in studio at 215-263-1079 and get your legal questions ready, and they will be more than happy to answer them for you.
What is that studio number again?
215-263-1079.
Okay. So we have a hot button topic for today, and the hot button topic today is an individual.
Do we want to do a mystery guest? First time or no?
Nah, I don't know. Well, anyway, we're being joined today, shortly, by an individual who's running for office in the city of Philadelphia, probably the highest elected official in this race. I think the person who can have the greatest impact on the on Philadelphia families, communities, and schools.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Well, that's a tall order there.
It is. He's got a big job ahead of him. So he'll be here shortly, and people will be able to call and ask questions of this individual just moments away.
Ponder who it is.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey,
listen, if you can guess with just that little bit, and you call in and you're the first one to tell me who's coming on the show today, you will get the My Philly Lawyer pack this week.
Nice.
Yeah.
The psychic pack.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a lady call in and win last week, so let's see
who
calls in this week.
There you go. We're always looking for people to give, loyal listeners to give our My Philly Lawyer pack to.
The other piece of news.
Yes, sir.
Hugh Hefner. We have to mention this. Hugh Hefner is getting divorced. I know we're all concerned about that. But
my heart bleeds.
I didn't even realize he was married.
Wait.
Because he's living with three girlfriends, I think.
How old is Hugh these days?
He's in his 80s, I believe.
I thought he was in his 800s.
But here's the story.
He's like the crypt keeper, you know?
Well, he looks pretty good. If you see him, though, he looks pretty good. And he's living with three Playboy playmates as his girlfriends, okay? So don't begrudge
Don't disparage him.
But here's the story. Apparently, he was married to a playmate. He had a child or children, I don't know, and they were separated in 89, I think it was. And apparently, she lives in the guest house or something right near the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed married to her for the benefit of the children. And now the children are 18. So it's time to get
divorced. Time to let it go.
Mm. But all through that time, I've always heard he's had girlfriends and these parties and all that. So I don't know what the relationship was like.
That reminds me of a topic that My Philly Lure talked about. And that is, don't forget, folks, if you're still married, even though you can't stand the person any longer and they're out of your life.
Right.
They take one-third of your estate, one-third, no matter what you do.
I'm sure there was a prenup with
you.
So
does that work for, like, what if you've been married 8 times? To all 8 people?
No, as long as you, just the 8th person.
The 8th. You have to be married at the time.
Unless you're a Mormon and they're all currently your wives.
Yeah.
Wow. So what if you were a polygamist and you did have 2 wives at the time that you
died? That would be ugly legal fight.
Yeah.
Which one's valid,
Well,
at least the first one.
The first one would be the valid one,
right,
because
mm-hmm.
that was consummated appropriately. And then right. everything after that would be a fraud.
Right.
Mm. Wow.
That would be my take. If I were the judge.
And the wife would be, the second wife would be awfully upset.
Well, we have a caller already ready to ask a question or perhaps be the first winner on the program today. Iona Phillips is calling in from Philadelphia, PA. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling because I heard about if you have a patent or if you have questions about a patent, you could call in and ask.
Yes. Well, actually, what I said was if you have a question about a patent and you'd like to hear more about it, you could blog or submit a question via email, and then we would create an entire blog to answer your question.
We actually have someone listening today who could possibly answer a patent question.
Yeah, but while we're on the air,
shout out to Michael.
And just sort of prime the pump, give us your patent question.
Well, my patent question is, I had sent in to, you see the things that come on TV and they say, if you have an idea,
right,
call this number and we'll help you get a patent. We'll help you do this, and this.
Okay.
So I sent in my information and they said they were going to help me, but they wanted a certain amount of money.
Of course.
So now I got a letter from the Federal Trade Commission saying that this company was being sued for like $10 million, and I was part of that suit because they were fraudulent and helping people get their patents and get their disclosure documents. And I just wanted to know, what should I do at this step, or from here on, what should I do in order to contact them and get the money? Because the Federal Trade Commission says all I had to do was wait. They would send out another check. But, you know, I have other things that I want to do, and I really want my inventions on the market because they are marketable. And I just wanted to know what to do at this point.
Well, okay. With regard to the case against the company being sued perhaps by the FTC, I would say follow the FTC's directions and submit information as required as they move along on that, what sounds like a class action lawsuit.
Yes.
And from this point going forward, as opposed to listening to these fly-by-night companies that oftentimes just take your money and don't really do anything, I would say that you probably need to establish a relationship with an attorney who specializes in patent law.
Yes.
And that way you'll be able to get direct information. And if the attorney doesn't do something right, you'll have somebody that you can, you know, locally speak to and talk to about that. Please call the office tomorrow at 215-227-2727.
227-2727.
Yeah, we'll get you the name of somebody who can help you with your patent questions.
Okay, and that's 227-2727.
Hey, do you want to do ads for me? That's great. That
you nailed. There you go, 215.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Tiffany, I don't know. Somebody's looking for your job. All right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you, Miss Iona.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, have a great day. This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB, brought to you by the Law Offices of Silver, Slangsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Give us a call with your legal question right now, 215-263-1079. We have Smith calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. Morning. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
I have a question about gym membership, if you can help me.
Ooh, I love that one. Go ahead.
I know. Actually, 3 months ago, me and my wife, who was pregnant at that time, decided to do some exercise because as per her doctor's advice, and we went to a local gym to get a membership. Okay. Very specifically, we told them right at the beginning that my wife was about like 6 months to 7 months pregnant then, that we are here for her pregnancy-related exercises, and we want to try our gym for 1 to 2 months and see how things go. I don't think so she would be able to continue the exercises during the late term of pregnancy. So, you know, they gave us all the, you know, good information. They said, yes, we will take care of you and you can come and join the gym. But at the time of signing the contract said six month membership. I told them specifically, this is not a 6 month membership. We can only become members if you allow us to be members for 1 to 2 months, and we will see how, you know, our schedule is. If we can fit in, we can come in, and if, you know, how my wife's pregnancy goes, and we will, you know, continue there. So they agreed on that in principle, and I specifically asked them to make changes in the contract. They said, you know, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. You come and join us. Okay, we joined, and they sent her to hot yoga classes for a few times. She became sick, and we went back to the doctor. The doctor said, you know, you shouldn't be doing this. You should take rest now. You're not doing well. So I go back to the gym and said, hey, sorry, you know, we've been members for 2 months, and I'm sorry we can't come in anymore. And the doctor is saying you shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't have gone to the hot yoga classes for the first time. That's not, you know, advice during pregnancy.
And they want you to pay for the rest of the 6 months, right?
Yes. Okay. So they made me pay for the rest of the term, at least 3 months. I protested, and I said, you know, this is wrong. This is not correct. But they said, no, you have to pay, otherwise we'll send out legal notices for collection and all that stuff. So I had to pay, and we attended only classes for three times.
Here's the deal. You mentioned something early in your in telling us what happened, that you actually recognized the importance of the contract, and you said to them, could you change the contract to reflect the 2 months instead of the 6 months?
Yes,
sir. But then you made the fatal error of saying, of accepting their comment of, oh, don't worry about it, it'll be okay, let's just leave it the way it is and you'll take our word for it. And therein lies the horrible problem. You signed a contract that said 6 months. Now,
yes, sir.
Now, I know these contracts are very detailed and you should read every single word of it. There may be something in there about having a medical problem and not being able to fulfill the contract because of a medical problem. But aside from that, they really have the upper hand because there's a signature on that contract and it's a duration of 6 months. If there's no way of getting out of that for medical reasons or what, then you may be bound to have to pay it. Now, equitably speaking,
here's my
what Dean has to say.
No, I agree completely with Rappy on this one. But here's my tip of the day for you and for everybody else who's listening regarding contracts. When you sign a written document and you have a contract, all the previous oral discussions that aren't contained in the contract are null and void. So if somebody says something to you orally, and then after that you sign a contract with that person, the prior oral communications mean nothing. Now, if you have subsequent oral communications, like you sign a contract, and then after you sign it, they say, hey, if your wife's pregnant and her pregnancy affects her ability to be here, we'll let you out of the contract. That's valid as an oral contract, as a subsequent contract. But prior manifestations must be contained in the written document. Otherwise, they're null and void. So look at the document, as David said. If you find like there's some ambiguity, if there's some confusion even, you might be able to use that against them to get out of this contract.
Yeah, the other thing is, it's obvious that she was pregnant at the time you entered into the contract. So you might be able to use that as an argument, equitably speaking, to say, even though they're denying it, it's obvious she was pregnant. You could see she was pregnant, and there was no way she could have gone through the 6 months.
Yeah,
I'm
not impressed with
that. It's the only argument I can think of off
the
cuff.
Well, but there's pregnant women who work out all the way up to the time they give birth.
Correct.
So.
Correct.
That's all right, listen, thanks for calling My Philly Lawyer. Hope we helped you, and have a great Sunday.
Thank you very much. You too.
Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Real quick, I want to do a shout-out to a birthday girl, Cynthia. And she is
executive director of Old City.
Yes,
Cynthia
I've been instructed to say that she is spending her weekend with the Pennsylvania Women's Campaign Fund in downtown Philadelphia.
There you go. All right.
I've been instructed.
Yes, Tiffany.
No, happy I was birthday. Just going to say, if you're tuning in, this is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. You can reach us via the telephone and ask your legal question at this time, 215-263-1079. We do have another caller on the line. Desiree Edwards is calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Fine. Thank you very much. How are you?
Good, good. I think I know who your guest might be this morning.
Yes. Oh.
Give it up. Give it up.
Is it Seth Williams?
Oh.
He just walked in, too.
Is it?
Yes. Nailed. Nailed.
Perfect.
Go ahead, Miss Desiree.
Desiree, guilty as charged.
He just walked in the second you said that, too.
That's funny.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, Desiree.
Good morning. How are you?
Outstanding.
Good, good, good.
Well, you win the My Philly Lawyer pack.
Yeah, so stay on the line, and our producer will get your address and particulars, and we're going to get you out a fabulous My Philly Lawyer gift pack for this week. And congratulations.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You
bye-bye.
Too.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Before we get to our special guest, we have one last caller so far on the line. We have Lisa Watson calling in with a question. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Hi. My name is Lisa Weston. I'm in Philly. I'm just calling to ask a question in reference to divorce.
Okay.
My husband and I have been married for about 7 years, and we're both looking to get divorced. We don't have any marital assets that require division. And with this economy, we're just looking to do it in the cheapest way possible. We were on a website called divorcelaw.com where they offer to prepare documents by a paralegal for $149. And I just wanted your legal opinion as to how valid you think something that we purchase off of a website would be in a court of law.
Well, I would say that if you don't have any marital property to split and you're both consenting to the divorce, you don't really need to do that. You can go and do it yourself.
Okay.
It's very easy. You can both go down to the family court, 34 South 11th, get the proper forms to fill out. They'll walk you through it. They'll tell you what
That's
to do.
That's the thing. We went to 34 South 11th, and they sent us over to 1133 Chestnut, which they gave us a printout. It looks like a copy of legal resources. And I was a little confused because I assumed that they would have gave me like an application, something to fill out.
Right.
Well, actually, let me just jump in.
You need to have a complaint filed.
So. Yeah, you need a complaint, and it's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you also that in Philadelphia, your filing fees will be more than they're quoting you. And they might not tell you that, but the papers that they prepare for you may be a sample complaint or what have you, which you might be able to file. But in addition to that $149, the city of Philadelphia will have their hands out for a piece of change, probably closing in on about $300 right now to file a complaint in Philadelphia. In addition to whatever fees that you're quoted, understand that the county in which you file your complaint in divorce will require filing fees. And then once the case gets moved to a judge for signature, there'll be another charge for a final divorce order. So they're not done nickel and diming you. You're not getting out of this marriage quite that inexpensively. But
that's true.
But it shouldn't, it shouldn't be an arm and a leg either. But I would say, honestly, you should anticipate your expenses being somewhere under $1,000, but more than $500 in order to get out of that.
Yeah.
You might
even be able to do that with an attorney. If you're both consenting, you can use the same attorney, have that attorney draw up the papers for you. I don't think an attorney would charge too much money if there are no difficulties and it's just a simple consent divorce.
The best of luck with that.
Initial filing does take place at 34 South 11th Street.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Have
Thank
a great day.
So
bye-bye.
Have a great day.
This
is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. If you're sitting back wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice, contact the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer with over 100 years of combined experience. They will aggressively fight for you. Call now tomorrow, for your free personal consultation. Remember, if you don't get paid, they don't get paid. So if you have answers for those answers to your questions and more, simply call 215-227-2727. Again, tomorrow, call 215-227-2727, or you can visit them online at myphillylawyer.com.
So, Seth Williams.
Good morning.
Welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Thank you very much. Sorry I was a little late.
Oh, that's quite all right.
I was coming down River Road. I was going through part of Pennsylvania. It seemed more like West Virginia.
Yeah.
And there was an arm across the road that was locked.
Yeah.
So
we've heard that before. Okay. That's for our protection.
All right.
Just for some disgruntled Court Radio listeners.
It was a lovely part of West Virginia, though, I might add.
And not inside the city limits, folks, so that's not to be held against Mr. Williams. In any way, shape, or form. So how's campaigning been? You're looking a little thinner.
Yes.
This has been a challenge. Philadelphia's a big city when you have to go around running around, huh?
Yeah, it's a huge city when you have to go to 8 different places during the span of the day.
Yeah.
From, Hog Island in South Philadelphia by the airport all the way to, the far northeast.
Yep.
But I have lost 25 pounds since the campaign started.
That's amazing.
But that's not for one of eating. I can tell you a lot of great places to eat all across the city of Philadelphia. But we have a lot of fun. But, the campaign is about a very serious matter. And that's why I'm glad to take the message to all points across the city. Unfortunately, as of the last count, I don't know the numbers for yesterday, but we had 209 homicides in the city of Philadelphia as of Friday. And we've had
210,
about 210 now.
Yeah.
All right. And we've had about 1,057 shootings.
Wow.
And Philadelphia leads the nation in the rate of homicides caused by handguns.
And that's the kind of people we need to get behind bars.
Right. We have to have the right people behind the bars.
So, absolutely. That's a message that we've been talking about here. And I hope that you join us in the idea that we really need to get the nonviolent offender.
Correct.
Rehabilitated. Right. That used to be a dirty word, rehabilitation. I think it's possible.
Right. Well, about 60% of the people that are incarcerated in our county facility up on State Road are nonviolent people. Close to 50% of them are awaiting their trials. They're there in pretrial detention. But there are a lot of things that we can do to ensure that we're cost-effectively using our criminal justice system. We only have the right people in jail. We're spending about $98 a day to incarcerate people in our city. So I believe that the answer isn't necessarily just to build more prisons, but we have to have the right people in prison. And unfortunately, Philadelphia leads the nation in the rate of felonies that get thrown out because the district attorney's office isn't ready. It's twice the national average. 59% of all the felons, almost 6 out of every 10 people that the police chase and jump over fences and arrest, have their cases thrown out. These people are shooting people, robbing people, breaking into homes. Mm-hmm. So the criminal justice system in many ways in Philadelphia is broken. And we have to do all that we can to fix it, to make it better for the victims and for the defendants. And you bring up an interesting point. I'm very interested in not just rehabilitating those that have been incarcerated through reentry programs, but I'm interested in pre-entry. I'm really interested in trying to do all that we can, one, to prevent crime. And that should be a focus of a district attorney's office, because I'm sure the families of everyone that works at MyPhillyLawyer.com would prefer that you weren't shot, not that you were shot and the DA's office handled the case well.
Right.
So we have to do all that we can to make sure you don't get shot. But what I really want to focus on, above and beyond that, in addition to community-based prosecution, and I hope we can talk about that at some point, is Back on Track. And Back on Track stands for the concept of helping first-time nonviolent offenders to ensure that we address the root causes of their criminal behavior. Because our system is broken, and it wants you to get arrested, to get convicted, to get a probation officer, to help you study for your GED, to help you get a job, to come report back to the judge that you have a job. Well, that's faulty logic, because once you have a felony conviction, even if you get a PhD later on, you can't get a job.
Right.
Which brings up another point, and that is that if it's costing $98 a day to keep somebody in jail, you would think that we could use a little bit of that money, still saving the city plenty of money, but maybe contributing $2, $3 an hour to a private sector individual such as myself, supplementing the hourly wage and bringing in some of those people who are nonviolent offenders who have gotten caught up in the system but who need to get back on track in the right way.
That's right.
It's a win-win.
Right.
I get to pay a little bit less for a competent employee, and the city saves a ton of money because they're not being watched by people behind bars, but they're being engaged in programs such as a job. You know, we all need jobs. Jobs make us feel better, helps us feed our family, and keeps us out of trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really believe in the concept that it's a new day and I have to be the new DA. And what I mean by that is that the district attorney has to understand the connection between economic development, education, public health, and law enforcement. And the days of just saying lock them up and throw away the key is over. So the Back on Track program takes these first time nonviolent offenders. And what we know is that the number one thing that people have in common that get arrested in Philadelphia is that they didn't finish high school. And so what we do with these people, instead of having them go to trial and us having the expense of the trial and them getting convicted and then them having most likely lives of frustration and despair because they can't get employed, which leaves them often to become even more violent and more increases the recidivism rate, we have to address the root cause. So we take these people, they're evaluating, we make sure they get their treatment for drug and alcohol addiction if that's appropriate. They do community service, so they're out there picking up crack vials and removing graffiti and trash off of the streets of Philadelphia. Third, we address their lack of literacy skills, so we teach them how to read. We have people that are helping them prepare for the GED if necessary. Most importantly, we pair them with and create pre-apprentice programs with different labor unions. You know, the guys who are down at the longshoremen, with the carpenters union, the cement masons, people that work for supermarkets in the city, so they can have a real entry-level job that's applicable to where we are here in the city of Philadelphia. If they complete the program in the year or the 2 years, then they have no record. So this is a program that works very successfully in San Francisco. Kamala Harris is the district attorney of San Francisco. She's the first African-American woman elected DA in the state of California.
Hey, that reminds me, would you be the first African-American in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania?
That's correct. I would become, in the history of the 1681, I would become the first African-American district attorney in the state of Pennsylvania. But this program that Kamala Harris has created in San Francisco only has like a 5% failure rate. Where in Philadelphia, about 73% of all the people who come out of probation or parole get rearrested in 1 year. Sure. Our system doesn't work because we're not addressing the root causes of the criminal behavior.
We need to do this. We need to do this because we can't afford to continue to warehouse, can't afford it on a lot of levels. I mean, you can't afford it in the upfront dollars that we're paying. That's obvious because there's places like Michigan where they're literally closing prisons down because they can't keep them open any longer. But we can't afford it from a societal standpoint to take our best minds, okay, and just throw them away over and over and over again to the point where we keep on dumbing down the city of Philadelphia. We're not competitive with our sisters and brothers in communities around us, and we lose. We're losing people, and we're losing tax base, and we're losing minds, and we're losing families. It's just bad. Right.
The fastest growing part of the state budget is, you know, the Department of Corrections. We have approximately 7 times the amount of people incarcerated in our state correctional facilities than we did 30 years ago. But I ask you, are we 7 times safer? I don't think so. We have to have the right people. So, you know,
we're not safer, I don't think.
If you commit a crime with a gun, if you're shooting people, if you're raping people, we're going to use all of our resources to ensure that you get a timeout. Like I have to give my 5-year-old, we're going to give you a timeout. But for the people that are stealing lawn gnomes or doing goofy things.
Lawn gnome,
lawn gnome theft.
Yeah. Wow.
So is there a statute on that, actually?
Lawn gnome. Unbelievable.
So, but there are a lot of people, you know, all of us. I don't know about you, but I've made it and made several mistakes when I was a young man that I'm glad didn't cost me my entire future. Well, we have to ensure that people, young folks, are doing silly things, goofy things, that we addressed what they did, but that we help them move on.
Sure.
Because it's not the severity of punishment that changes behavior. It's the certainty of punishment. That's if you're housebreaking a pet, if you're trying to teach a child how to behave, or a criminal. It's not the severity. It's the certainty. And we do not have a certainty of punishment in Philadelphia if 59% of all the felons walk because the district attorney's office isn't ready.
Okay, I have two things to say. Number one, you're absolutely right.
Right.
The city of Philadelphia has the 25 most violent schools in the Commonwealth. They're all here.
Right.
And that's where the kids are learning the violence. We need to start at that level, breaking it down, identifying it, and then supervising and pulling out and making sure that these kids learn a different way.
Right.
And secondly, a lot of the criminal behavior, the gnome stealing, is to feed a drug habit. And the statistics of those who have drug issues behind bars and who have committed their crimes while either drug seeking or drug using is tremendously high. If we're not dealing with that, and a lot of communities have been going to a drug court system.
Right.
What do you feel about that?
Well, I think that's good. And I think it addresses, again, the root cause of the problem. We have to deal with drug addiction first as a public health problem. We should also be dealing with the violence and the shooting epidemic as a public health problem. But as it relates to drug addiction, we have to deal with it as a public health problem to ensure people, one, are like very few people my age. I'm 42. Very few people my age, or much fewer, smoke than people maybe 20 years older than me. Because when I was a little kid watching cartoons, Scooby-Doo on Saturdays, they had all these commercials coming on saying, don't smoke, all between Schoolhouse Rock. You remember, don't smoke, smoking's for losers, or whatever the ad council said. And we have very few people, or many fewer, smoking. We have to do the same type of public education about the use of narcotics, about the use of guns. We have to teach the children conflict resolution so that we don't have people like last week, guys getting arguing on a basketball court about a hard foul and then someone shooting 2 people and 1 person dying. There has to be a different way. And the district attorney has to be a part of that. It's not enough to just say, well, whatever the cops bring us, we'll deal with. No, I believe the district attorney's office has to use, one, the bully pulpit, but also every advocacy ability and opportunity to work with schools to prevent crime. But at the same time, I don't believe we need to militarize schools. We don't need to have more police in schools. We need to give the teachers and the non-teaching assistants the support they need, but to create an environment inside of the school where they can do their job, which is teaching.
Yeah, like I was going to say, there needs to be also, it's a community issue too, there needs to be activities.
Right.
And that's the unfortunate thing about what's going on with the economy and the budget. They're taking away a lot of the activities, extracurricular activities, music, all the things that take kids away from the gang type thing where you get peer pressure and then you go and you start stealing things and doing
right.
That.
Well, at the same time, a lot of these, you're right, the budget and the budget crisis is terrible, but I think the budget crisis can be in many ways the impetus, or it can bring all of us together to try to address the problems right now.
I agree.
Because we have to find lots of ways to address it and save money. But, you know, my father was a school teacher. He ran a day camp in the summer and he worked at a recreation center at night. And it's very cost effective and very cheap to have a bag of basketballs, three basketballs, four basketballs, some hoops, checkers, table tennis, movie night on Mondays for kids to come into a recreation center and to give them something positive to do from about 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. We would hope they'd be home studying, but for those that aren't, we need to give them a place where they can go and be safe and do things that we want kids to do. And it's much more cost-effective to spend the 88 cents a day, if you were to break down the cost of basketballs and checkers and chess games that are plastic, than the $98 a day to incarcerate one of those individuals.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Remember, if you've been injured from an automobile accident, slip and fall, work-related mishap, or medical negligence, call the attorneys at Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com, and don't you give it a second thought. Call for your free personal consultation. And remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. With over 100 years of combined experience, just let them aggressively fight for you, and you just sit back and get well. Call them tomorrow morning at 215-227-2727 or visit their informative website at MyPhillyLawyer.com. If you can't wait until tomorrow, you can always call now. 215-263-1079, the number to reach us in studio. If you're ready, gentlemen, we do have a question on the line.
Shoot.
All right. We have Ishani calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. It's Asha B.
First
of all, I'd like to say welcome. I really appreciated the comments that were just made. I think they're very accurate. On another note, I want to say thank God we're getting rid of Lynn Abraham. Good riddance. Please don't come back into government ever again. One of the things that I think is not being addressed is the source of the guns that come into Philadelphia. The Pennsylvania legislature wouldn't pass the law that would prosecute where people had to report their guns lost or stolen. They said they didn't want to punish the wrong people. And I think that we've had a lot of gun running of people who are allowed to buy guns on a frequent basis, and then they're kind of running them into Philadelphia and making a profit, and nothing's being done to address that.
That's an excellent point. If I can jump in first here. I ran for district attorney first in 2005, and I got 46% of the vote then. And one of the things I said is it has to be a priority of the district attorney to go after the illegal guns. And what do I mean by that? People say, well, what does that mean, the illegal guns? Well, 85% of the homicides in Philadelphia are caused by handguns. We lead the nation in that rate. The people that are killing each other aren't waiting in line to buy guns legally at, you know, you name the sporting goods place.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sending away to get a license to carry a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
People pull up in schoolyards and sell guns out of the trunks of a car. In some neighborhoods, in some parts of West Philadelphia, as crazy as it might sound, you can go and you can rent a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to prosecute aggressively the people that profit off of the bloodshed in the city of Philadelphia.
Yes.
It has to be a priority. In the past, we had like 18 people going after insurance fraud. You know, you live in Mayfair, but you insure your car at Mays Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a crime. And they had 5 people going after welfare fraud. You know, that's a crime. I'm saying we have to use our resources to go after the people that are shooting and killing each other by stopping the guns, because the guns aren't being made at 52nd and Florence.
No.
Okay? So we have to go after the people who are selling these guns and trafficking these guns, just like we try to go after the pyramid of the people who are pushing the drugs.
Yes.
So I agree, but we also, part of your question was we have to creatively and use our imaginations to come up with gun laws that we can effectively enact in city council and in Harrisburg.
Yes.
You know, and one of those is making sure that if your gun is stolen, you have to report it stolen.
Yes.
You know, if your car is stolen, you have to report it stolen. I would think that it just makes logical sense that if something as lethal as a handgun, if it's stolen, you would have to report it stolen. Because what happens, for those that aren't as sophisticated as you, when people often they go, they buy a gun, they then sell it to someone.
Yes.
That person does something criminal with it. When they trace the gun back to the person who legally purchased it, that person goes, oh, I didn't know it was stolen. And
right.
Blah, 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 blah. So that's called a straw purchase. So we have to go after those straw purchasers. But one tool in the toolbox for that is to ensure that people have to report their guns stolen when they are stolen.
Or lost, as they say.
Or lost, correct.
That because takes, people are, they are from outside of the city. They are selling guns. They are gun running into the city. And I know they know that's known. And it can't be so hard to trace it because they're supposed to, they're manufactured. They have the serial numbers on them. They know to whom they were sold or to whom they were shipped and from what store they were sold. And so they should know to whom they were sold. And so why is it so hard to find out originally where those guns are coming from? They're not coming from inside Philadelphia.
I'll tell you why it's so hard, because big business
yes.
doesn't want to spend the money to protect your children.
No.
If the presidents of Allstate, AIG, and whatever other insurance companies are out there, if their kids were on the basketball court with your kids and potentially getting killed, they'd be spending a ton of money on finding illegal guns. But instead, they finance insurance fraud
right.
and have 14 assistant district attorneys running around trying to find somebody who claimed a VCR was stolen from their house when it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not here to minimize property crimes of that nature. But the point is that, you know, it's all about money. And the only way we get to stop it is to put our foot down collectively and say enough is enough. You know, we got these legislators up in Harrisburg, and they're dancing around for the dollars of corporate America.
Right.
And we need to go up there and say, no, we put you here. You're going to do our will. We're going to take your butt and bring you back and sit you back home wherever you came from, and you're not going to get to be up there anymore driving around in Commonwealth cars, mm-hmm. having Commonwealth meals, on my tax dollars.
That's right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. And because
right.
I think the criminal
preach
justice
on.
System,
it's Sunday.
Be a
you
profit.
Go, Dean.
Criminal. I know you have to go, but the criminal justice system should not be a profit-making business. It should not be the.
Yeah,
the,
we know what happens when it's a profit-making business. Well. Look at Lehigh County.
Yeah, you know, Luzerne County.
Right, Luzerne.
Yeah,
sure. Sorry, Lehigh. Sorry, it
oh,
was
boy.
The other L.
Here come the emails
yes.
from Lehigh.
Yes, Luzerne County. Right.
Yeah.
Let's build prisons and make it a private enterprise,
sure.
and then we'll get the judges to throw kids in the prisons.
Mm, yeah. No, let's build schools.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. And rec centers, like Seth said.
And rec centers.
Yeah. All right, well, you
Thank
know
you.
What? The day has come, I think. The tide has turned. Rehabilitation is no longer a dirty word, and we can spend money on the upfront to make sure that they're not in jail. Thanks for calling, and have a great Sunday.
Thank you, too. Bye.
All right. Don't forget to give us a call if you have a question or a comment. You can reach us here in studio at 215-263-1079.
So, why, you know, Seth, I mean, your opponent's running around with an ankle bracelet. I thought that was pretty cool, I have to say. But why you, not him?
We need fewer politicians with ankle bracelets. Fewer politicians under the court supervision.
Yeah.
No,
that
why
would be
me? I have more experience and leadership experience than all of my opponents that ran in the primary, and much more than my Republican opponent. I was an assistant district attorney here in Philadelphia for 10 and a half years. During that time, I was on the hiring committee. I supervised the 30 newest lawyers in the municipal court unit
Ooh,
for
2 years.
That
sounds like a job.
Yeah, it's a tough job.
Yeah.
I was asked by Lynn Abraham in 2000 to create the Repeat Offenders Unit. And I created that unit. I used a geographic vertical prosecution method, meaning that DAs were assigned to a specific police division, and they handled all the cases from that division from start to finish. Currently, the DAs are assigned to courtrooms, and for the most part, they get assigned their cases the afternoon before they go to court. The Repeat Offenders Unit was created with to deal with the phenomena that in Philadelphia, 5% of the criminals commit 60% of the crimes. So if you can use your resources to address that small group of people who are making life a living, you know what, for the rest of us, then you can really get far in reducing crime and improving quality of life. So I was in charge of that unit for 2.5 years. I left the DA's office so I could run in 2005. I came close, but I'm also a major in the United States Army Reserves. I teach leadership at Newman College in their master's program. Mm. I was the president of my civic association, Overbrook Park Civic Association, for 10 years. I was in charge of the church carnival at my church for 11 years. Oh. I have a wife, I have 3 daughters, and my mother lives with me. So I am definitely an expert in conflict resolution.
The only male. Wow, that must be
Well, my
tough.
Dog, Henry, he's there. Okay, he keeps me company sometimes. But we even have a female guinea pig and a female cat. So I'm outnumbered and outgunned. But yeah, I say all that to say that I have much more experience, much more leadership experience, and I've had the vision. Many of the things my Republican opponent talks about are things that I talked about when I ran in 2005 and this year. You know, we have to be smart on crime and not just tough. That we have to use vertical prosecution. That we have to be open to all the different ways. You made fun of the idea of GPS systems. But the use of other methods of controlling those people that are in the criminal court system as opposed to just incarceration, we have to be willing to look at all of them. GPS systems, day reporting, all different types of ideas that we have to keep our minds open to now. The one person called and, you know, she said some things about Lynn Abraham. And while I ran aggressively against her and think that we need to change a lot of the policies, she was a good public servant. But just that was the mindset of how DAs were to operate, you know, a generation ago. Right. So I think now we just have to be open to more than just book 'em Dano and more than just, you know, throw away the key for the political soundbite that makes, but to really be about problem solving. So I really want to work with communities through community-based prosecution, having DAs assigned to neighborhoods, getting to know the names of the town watch groups, the clergy, the civic associations. See, police are assigned geographically. Probation officers are assigned geographically. Even trash men in Philadelphia are assigned how? Hmm. Geographically. So I want to assign the DAs geographically, and they'll get to know the names of the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, when I was a kid growing up in West Philly on 63rd Street between Catherine and Webster, if your car got stolen, everybody knew the name of the family of brothers that lived on the 6100 block of Catherine that probably stole your car.
Yeah, you have to get the community involved
right?
a lot
so
more, definitely.
We have to involve the community. The DAs have to work and, you know, infuse themselves in the community to know how to pronounce the names of the streets, know how to pronounce the names of the communities. You can't go up to Juniata Park and say, I'm glad to be here in Juanita Park. People will look at you like you have 3 heads,
right.
That you're obviously, you don't care about them.
Right.
You don't know about Philly. And why don't you just go back to wherever you came from? And you just like totally shut these people off. So you have to be able to involve yourself, immerse yourself in the community, but also it makes them, the DAs, more accountable to the public and better public servants because they'll know that, you know what, the 6200 block of Walton Street runs one way from 62nd Street to the Parkway. So if a person's telling you they were driving the other way, then you know they were lying. So just knowing the names and the communities helps them become better prosecutors, both out of the courtroom and inside of the courtroom.
What challenges are you facing to do that? I mean, it sounds like an easy fix, you know? I mean, why wasn't it done yet?
Well, I mean,
are
I think
it's just like the creative, you know.
I've always had a special, I think, like Alice and, you know, looking through the Alice's, the Wonder, what is it, the Wonder Glass? Or
Looking Glass.
The Looking Glass, right now. So, you know.
I didn't read that either.
Yeah. I had to read the Cliff Notes when I was in second grade.
Right.
But I think that,
We went to law school, you know.
Oh, if I'd been good in math, I would have gone to medical school.
Right, exactly.
My mom would have been really proud.
We always say that. Can't do numbers.
But I say that to say that, you know, I've always been a person, I think, to try to look outside of the box, to try to solve problems. But it works in other places. I wish I could say I'm inventing community-based prosecution, but it works very well in Brooklyn.
Right.
You know, it works very well in Portland.
Hey, listen,
you're in Kalamazoo, Michigan, so we have to take the best practices.
You know enough to find the places in America that are successful in areas and bring them here.
That's right.
That's good enough for me.
And I've always tried to do that. But this summer, you know, while I do have an election November the 3rd, I take very seriously that I have to be ready to take over on January the 5th. So I just can't wait between November the 4th and January the 5th. Mm-hmm. I have spent this summer trying to learn some of the best practices of district attorneys across the country, from Risa Furman right here in Montgomery County, to Joe Hines, the DA of Brooklyn, to the DA of Dauphin County, you know, Harrisburg, the DA Steve Zapala in Allegheny County. I went to San Diego and met with a Republican there, Bonnie DeManis. There's a lot of great and innovative programs.
Did I hear that? You met with a Republican?
Republican? That's right.
Whoa.
Bonnie DeManis.
Looking outside the box.
Well, she claims to be very on the cutting edge, and that she claims to be the only openly gay Republican district attorney in California.
Wow.
But she had a lot of great ideas, and I spent 3 days with her staff. I then went and spent the day with the district attorney of San Francisco, where I learned in depth about Back on Track and the details of that. Mm-hmm. So we have to be willing to say, you know, we've had mistakes here. We've got some good things here. But we have to be able to look at other places and see what we can replicate here. We might be able to duplicate everything. Some things just won't fit. But I believe community-based prosecution will definitely work in Philadelphia. Philadelphians love their neighborhood. They might hate yours. They might hate everybody else's neighborhood, but they love their own.
I think you touched on the biggest reason why it's been so hard to do is the perception. And I really think it's a political thing. People love the soundbite of Book 'em Dana.
Right.
They, you know, it gets great ratings, and it's, you know, we're going to be hard on crime, hard on crime, hard on crime. What you're doing is a tough sell to people who are ingrained in that mindset.
Right,
but I think, it sounds like across the country there seems to be people who
right,
are
but I think if, you know, and I want to bring, not to be too much of an academic, but, you know, we have to
use a little academic around here.
Exactly.
We have to use empirical data.
Absolutely.
And criminology. So I'm creating a real partnership with Professor Lauren Sherman, who runs the criminology department at Penn, so that we can really analyze with real numbers. I won't go on the radio anecdotally spouting off X, Y, or Z, but say, look, these are the numbers. This is how we're going to really correct the system. And so I think being hard on crime is being smart on crime.
Brains and brawn.
And when people, exactly.
How about that?
And when people commit crimes with guns or shoot each other or rob people or rape people, we will have the resources to really address those people. But for first-time nonviolent offenders, as an example, last year in Philadelphia, 4,700 adults were arrested, and their most serious crime was possessing less than 20 grams of marijuana, which by definition is de minimis. That's less than, it's like 2.5 joints, okay? And we arrest them, and it costs about $800 to $1,000 every time we have a case listed in court. When you consider the salaries, the yep. pensions, the lights, the gasoline to bring people, all these things, it's an astronomical figure. For, you know, we have to test the marijuana. There's so much that we could do. We could just have those people, the police make sure they're not wanted for something else, fingerprint them and all that stuff, but then just have them pay a fine. That will save us a lot of time in court. Most of those people would pay the fine. It's not decriminalizing it. It's just a different way of dealing with that situation, because we need to use our resources not on the kid who was caught with a bag of weed at 52nd and Chestnut. We need to be going after the guy who had a trunk of guns. Right.
Mm. And I might add, if number one, if we saved $1,000 on that on those two joints, and the person pays a fine of $200, we've got $1,200. If you even cut out a third of that, let's say $400. And spent it on some kind of a program for that person that will maybe make it a little bit more likely that he won't have five joints next month, or maybe move on to cocaine next month, you have perhaps saved a child in the city of Philadelphia.
Correct.
You've saved a child in the city of Philadelphia. You've saved the city $800
save
net.
Money too, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It doesn't make any sense not to do
exactly.
that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
And that's why we need a new district attorney. That's why the day has come when somebody needs to step up, and you're the man now. You've stepped up. You've got the ideas. You need to lead the city in this new venture. You talked about, very briefly, we're down to like 2 minutes. One more thing. 1 minute. Sorry about that. CPO.
What is it? Chief Performance Officer. Actually, having a staff member at the DA's office that's trained in criminological methods and analysis of numbers, much better than I am, of course, to have that
somebody
person,
who could have been a doctor.
Right, yeah, right. To have that person actually base the performance of the policies of the DA's office and personnel on how well they help us reduce crime. And using those numbers as opposed to what your conviction rate is, but how well are you helping people in Germantown reduce crime, reduce the harm index. So using a chief performance officer to use science to actually analyze what we do at the district attorney's office. You go to my website at VoteSethWilliams.com. You can learn about that and all of the other policy papers that I have released. I released more policy papers during the primary than all of my opponents put together.
VoteSethWilliams.com, folks. That's where it is. This is the man. This is the next district attorney of the city of Philadelphia. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. All right.
All right. Thank you so much. And for Dean Weitzman and for David Rappaport and our special guest producer, Kyle, thank you so much for all of your hard work today. Please have a peaceful, positive, and productive Sunday. Don't go anywhere because Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins is up next. Bye-bye.
107.9 WRNB.